Well, I'd like to thank the organizers for letting me come tell you about some of the work going on in my group. So I'm going to talk about work that's gone on over the last several years with a number of people, now most of them formerly in my group, spread around the country. So the motivation for this was we were looking, about 5 years ago, started looking at some problems in distributed, multi-vehicle, cooperative control systems. Some overlap with the types of things that Hugh talked about, but we were looking at problems in which we wanted to control the motion of a bunch of robots to work together to solve a cooperative task. And we formulated that in the context of a game, which we called RoboFlag. So the idea on RoboFlag is you have a field, you have a red team, and you have a blue team, and it's capture the flag with robots. And so the idea is that the blue robots want to go over into the red team's side, they want to go inside this defense zone, there's a flag at the center, they want to capture the flag, they get 5 points when they capture the flag, they want to bring the flag back into their home zone, they get 25 points when they come back into their home zone. And of course, the red robots want to stop them from doing that, and so the red robots can tag the blue robots. So if I come up and I touch you, essentially, then you're tagged. Once you get tagged, then you get pulled back into your home zone, at which point you can come back into play. And so there's a very nice interaction between trying to figure out how many robots should I allocate to defending, right, and staying and trying to figure out what's going on back in my home zone, to going and capturing the flag, what types of strategies should I do in terms of faking the other teams out and other things. And I won't get to talk about all of that, and so I'm going to kind of dive down into some of the sub-problems. So some of the problems that you look at are, first, how do you just take a set of robots and maintain a formation? That is, if one of the things I want to do is if I have local sensing regions, so the robots can't see everything, they can only see some region around them, and they'd like to, for example, establish some sort of a perimeter around their defense zone so they can see if something comes in, then if one of these goes out because it needs to refuel as they do, then everybody needs to reassign themselves, keep the right position relative to each other. If somebody moves, I need to go in and fill that gap, etc. So how do we solve that problem, and how do we look at what information do I have to share in order to do that? Another problem that we can look at is very much the sensor fusion problem, the distributed estimation problem. Each of the blue robots needs to have some knowledge of what's going on in the field, and they have their own local sensor information, but they can also talk across a communications network, and we sort of model this as a point-to-point communications network. So very much exactly the problem that Hugh described about how do all of these do that, and in fact, as we started looking at that problem, we more or less picked up the types of results that Hugh was doing, said this is the way to do it, so we started doing some work and then stopped doing work as we found out what was out there. But thinking about how to do that in a distributed context, how do you do that when you lose packets and other things, has been something we've been interested in. And then finally, this problem of distributed consensus, that is, how do you get a bunch of robots who are having to try and decide what to decide in a very fast way, okay, I'm going to do this, and you're going to do that, and we're going to agree on what we're going to do, so that we don't both go after the same person and leave a hole, for example, or do something like that. And so these types of problems have been ones that we've been thinking about and trying to understand what sort of theoretical frameworks are required to do that. And so we've broken that down into a number of different techniques that are required for solving these subproblems. And so I'll only get to talk about essentially one of these today, which is some work that we did on cooperative control. We've also done work on distributed receiving horizon control. We've also done work on protocols for looking at consensus control. So I'll try and give you a little bit of an overview, but concentrate on some of the kind of more foundational work that a lot of this builds on. Okay, and we actually implement and test this in the past. We've stopped doing this now, but in the past we've implemented this each summer. We've basically had a bunch of students come out and spend the summer implementing this as part of a competition. Okay, so let me focus then, at least at first, on this formation control problem just to give you a sense of some of the techniques that we've been using. And so the idea here actually started from a different problem, which is if you have a bunch of satellites and you're trying to do distributed array imaging, and when you're doing distributed array imaging, you want to maintain the formation. You want different satellites to be in the right relative position to each other. And you want to think about how are you going to do that. And the problem that we looked at was, how should I communicate to other people where I am, and what do I need to know about where other people are in order to solve this formation problem? And we looked at having two different types of information that we might communicate. So you might have bidirectional information, the green arrows here, that represent information that I can communicate to you via, say, a wireless network. So for the most part, if I can send you information via a wireless network, then you can send me information via that wireless network. But we can also have directed information that has to do with what I sense about you, right? And so if I'm facing this way, you can all see where I am, but of course I can't tell anything about you, right? And so I may not have a symmetric situation. And so we wanted to look at situations where the graph that describes the information flow might be a directed graph, not an undirected graph, and whether that made any difference. And the problems that we wanted to look at were, if all of these are having to maintain some sort of position relative to one another, then what you can imagine happening is that this robot is, let's say, looking at this one, so the information flows this way. And so I can say, well, I want to stay this far away from this one, and I want to stay this far away from this one, and I can have how far each of us should stay away from each other. And what I'd like to do then is say, does it matter who looks at who in order to get that formation of robots to be stable? Right? Can I use any connected graph? Right? Or should I use, do I have to have a complete graph? Right? Does it have to be somehow, do I have to have a bidirectional graph? Right? What are the properties of the topology of this information flow that reflect on the stability of this sort of distributed dynamical system that I'd like to have be in some state? So that was the problem that we were looking at. And in particular, I think it's very interesting to ask this question about how the topological structure of the information flow affects the overall stability of the system. And so that was sort of the problem we started with, and then we've looked at that in the context of lots of different distributed dynamical system problems with some sort of information flow between them. So in the case of that specific problem, we can take a kind of the simplest class of those problems is what I'll call the formation control problem or the formation stabilization problem. I have a bunch of robots. Think of these as just satellites that are up there. And they have some graph that describes what information they can see. I'm going to assume only sense data for now, that is, they can see things about you. So it'll be a directional information flow in principle. I'll assume that the dynamics of each of these agents are identical. So I've got a bunch of the same satellites or the same robots or whatever it is. You can extend in various ways this the heterogeneous case. And I might like to do something like maintain a hexagonal formation. And where exactly the hexagonal formation is or how it's oriented, I may not care about that. I just want that my relative position, say, to my two neighbors is right at the right angle and the right distances for us to be in a hexagon. And I might look at doing that in different ways. So for example, I could use this information flow where everybody looks at their left and right neighbors and it's a bidirectional information flow, or I could use this information flow where robot number one sends information, meaning robot number four senses information about robot number one, but I'll call it a sends information. So the information flows from one to four and one to two, but robot number two doesn't see robot number one. Instead, it gets information from robot number one, but doesn't send information back. Instead, the way that robot number one knows where robot number two is really by the relative position between two and five and the relative position between five and one. I'm not going to sort of multi-hop information through. I'm only going to look at where I am relative to the people that I can see. And so robot one sends information to robot two. So two sees one. Two doesn't see anybody else. Five sees the position of six and two and three and four, right? And then uses that to try and figure out where it should be. So question, which one of these is better? Right? Same problem. I want to be in a formation, right? Which one of these will get better performance and why, and how do we understand? Or is there an optimal topology to use on? All right, so the way that we'll formulate that in this particular case is to say, well, let's form an error, and what the error will be is that I will take the sum over all of my neighbors of the position where I should be. Essentially, I take my current position, I take my position minus my neighbor's position, I compare that to what it should be, so I assume I know where it is I should be relative to the people I see. I then take some weighting of that, and use that as my error. So I know that I've got some error that's a weighted combination of the errors from all of the people that were my neighbors, and I'm gonna now try and use that error, right, to decide where to move, right, in some direction. And I'd like to know what topologies are the best ones or different ones, which ones are stable, which ones are unstable. So that was the problem that we looked at. And if you look at this for a little while, perhaps not surprising to people in this group, the Laplacian comes up as a natural way to describe the graph. Here we did a weighted Laplacian. We just multiplied through by the out-degree matrix. So the Laplacian normally is the out-degree matrix minus the adjacency matrix multiplied through by the inverse of the out-degree matrix. And this matrix has a lot of nice properties that allow us to manipulate it and understand the information flow. And in particular, a couple of easy ones are that there's always a zero eigenvalue in the way that we've done it. And so the way to read the Laplacian is to say that here, robot number one essentially sends information to robot number two and robot number four, right? And so you have a one here and a half here, and we are using a uniform weighting of the information from each one. So robot number one essentially sends information, half of it, to each of these two things. Robot number two sends information to robot number five, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This will clearly have a zero row sum, so there's always a zero eigenvalue. You can show that if there are more than one zero eigenvalues, then you have a disconnected graph. right? So one thing you know is that the eigenvalues tell you whether you're connected or not, and probably not too surprisingly, the second smallest eigenvalue, that is the one that's not zero, the first one that's not zero, tells you something about how connected the graph is. So this is usually called the algebraic connectivity, and it tells you something about how much, whether you have sort of bottlenecks in your information flow to some extent. And it'll come up with some other things we do. Okay, so we have this idea of a Laplacian that describes our graph. If we now put together the control problem, we have a bunch of identical processes. We take them as linear processes for the analysis that I'm going to show you. It's been extended to nonlinear systems. And we have a bunch of identical processes. We then take the output of all of those processes, the position, we feed them through essentially this Laplacian matrix. So it turns out the Laplacian matrix is exactly the matrix that gives me the error for each of the individual robots, right? So it is that weighted error. I then take that and I run it through some compensator, and here we're going to restrict ourselves to using the same compensator for each of the robots. And so what I want to do is I want to put a single compensator on each robot such that when I take the weighted error and use that to correct my motion, I get stable operation. That is, we go to an equilibrium point where that equilibrium point corresponds to the desired formation. And so if you formulate that in the normal wave control, you've got some block diagonal transfer function for your process, some block diagonal transfer function for your controller, and this Laplacian matrix that comes in is the interconnection. And so it makes sense that the properties of the Laplacian should somehow tell us something about the stability of this system, combined with the dynamics as represented by the transfer functions for the process and the controller. So we have some linear system, we represent it via its transfer function, we'd like to understand it. So Alex Fax was a graduate student who looked at this problem, and he came up with a nice, very simple result that I like in terms of the insight that it gives you, which is the following, which is that if I have a system of this form, so block diagonal, process, and controller, connected by a graph, directed graph is fine, represented through this Laplacian, then the system is stable if and only if the Nyquist plot of the open loop system doesn't encircle the point minus 1 over the eigenvalues of L. So those of you who know the Nyquist theorem for control theory, whenever you have a loop, you normally don't want to encircle the minus 1 point. And if you don't encircle the minus 1 point, then the system is stable. Here, you replace the minus 1 point by minus 1 over the eigenvalues of the Laplacian for each of the eigenvalues of the Laplacian. And so what this does is essentially say that the dynamics of the agents are represented by the Nyquist curve, basically the transfer function plotted on the complex plane, the frequency response plotted on the complex plane, so this blue curve right here. And the topology of the information flow is represented by the location of the eigenvalues. And what you're looking for is that those two don't intersect in the sense that there are no encirclements of this closed, it'll be a closed curve, there are no encirclements of these points. And so if I change the topology, I move the eigenvalues. If I change the dynamics, I move the blue curve. Right? But there's a separation between those two. And so I can then look at different topologies and say which ones are good and which ones are bad. And so in particular, if I take this graph over here, then those are the eigenvalues of Laplacian for that graph. If I use these dynamics, so this corresponds to a second order system, just f equals ma with a time delay, then and a controller that's basically just a proportional derivative controller, be very standard in this situation, then that's the blue curve over there. And it closes off on this side, and in fact, I can say that in this case, the system is stable, and I can look at different things. So that leads you to thinking about, well, what can I say anything about the different classes of eigenvalues as a function of properties of the graph? And we had great hopes for being able to do a lot here, and if any of you are experts in graph theory and know more about these types of results, please come talk to me. But you can say a couple of simple things. One is that if you have a unidirectional tree, basically a follow the leader type of a situation, then in that follow the leader situation, you can show that all of the eigenvalues of the Laplacian are 0 and 1, and minus 1 over there, those, minus 1 over those, is basically minus infinity and minus 1. And what this then says is that if you're in a follow the leader situation, it reduces to the normal stability of the individual agents, which makes sense. We have a bunch of stable things following each other around, then it's all stable. And there are no loops, right? What goes wrong is that we get a cycle. I move, and then you move, and then you move, and I see you move, and so I move, and somehow that all goes out of whack, right? We get some sort of a positive feedback loop. And you can't have a positive feedback loop here. If you have an undirected graph, then you can show that all of the eigenvalues are real and between 0 and 2. And so minus 1 over those are between minus a half and 1. And so any set of dynamics that doesn't cross this part of the negative real axis will always be stable. Right? But that's clearly more restrictive, because before I just had the knot encircle the minus one point. Now, if I want to do it for any arbitrary directed graph, I want to avoid all crossing of the negative real axis beyond minus a half. So more restrictive. If you have a cycle, a single cycle, so your graph is a single cycle, then you can show that the eigenvalues live someplace on the line minus one half. So this is probably worse, right? Which tells you that somehow cycles are maybe a little bit worse than other things. Somewhat hard to completely do. And if you have a periodic graph, you can also say certain things about where it lives. And so these are the classes of things that we know about, and we'd like to be able to do more. And I'll sort of give you some conjectures about what we'd like to be able to show, but we haven't been able to, from a general formal point of view, move much beyond these classes. Although the theorem, of course, if you give me a given graph, I can evaluate it, right? The idea is, can I characterize something about classes of graphs so I can better tell you what to do? But this tells you follow the leader, will do certain things, right? Other types of things are hard. All right, so let's look at this example. Here's the situation that I put before. An interesting thing about this that's a little bit counterintuitive the first time you encounter it is that more information can sometimes be bad. So for example, suppose I say this is the information flow, and now what I'd like to do is I'd like to add a little bit of information. So suddenly I'd like, I can't remember which way it goes, but I'd like vehicle one, instead of just looking at vehicle two, also to look at vehicle six, so it can be a little bit better at what it's doing, right? So I can use more information. Well, if you do that, and vehicle one starts looking at vehicle six, or six looks at one, whichever way that goes, then in fact you can show that the new eigenvalues of the Laplacian are these red x's, and they cross over. And so this system's unstable. So the previous one was stable, with the red link it's unstable. Now why is that happening? More information, why should that be bad? Well, of course, what's happening is I'm creating additional cycles of information, and those cycles of information somehow are creating confusion. And so you'll notice that in this particular graph, I have a three cycle of information here. That is, if this robot moves a little bit, then that will cause robot six to move. Robot six will cause robot two to move, but robot two will cause me to move. And so sort of three steps later, I see my own motion. But notice there's also a three cycle sitting here, right? And another three cycle sitting here, which means that when one robot moves, three cycles later, I see a little bit of that motion, but then three cycles after that, I see that motion again, plus another three cycle worth of information comes in. So a conjecture is that what you don't want are lots of cycles at the same length, right? It's kind of a resonance condition, right? If you have lots of resonant cycles, meaning lots of cycles at the same length, that's bad. I'd love to be able to say something more formal about that. There's some tantalizing things in the structure of the characteristic equation, the Laplacian, but we haven't been able to nail that down. So I think it's an interesting question about how does the topology of the information flow affect our ability to reason about the overall stability of the system. Okay, so stability is one thing, of course, but it's not everything. And so one of the very first things that you figure out is that if you just focus on stability, you don't get very usable answers. So suppose I take that formation control algorithm, and here I've used this particular information flow, the hexagon formation and just nearest neighbor information flow. And suppose that I implement that control law, which is stable in this case. You can go calculate it out, and it's stable. Here's what happens. All right, so what happened in that was that I started out with some initial position, and my right-hand neighbor was over there, and my left-hand neighbor was maybe way over there. And so what I start doing is I start moving in that direction. Well, the problem is that their left and right-hand neighbors might be way over in some other spot, so they start moving, right? And eventually we get it all sorted out, but we're all kind of moving in the wrong direction initially. So what you want to do, and kind of Alex's insight, was what you really want to do is first, agree on where the center of the formation is, and then once you agree on where the center of the formation is, sort of everybody move relative to that point. Right? So the first thing we tried doing was not that, but just saying, well, by tuning the dynamics, don't move quite as fast, be a little bit more calm, don't overreact, can you do stuff? And so you can try first just tuning the dynamics of the system, so you add essentially a filter in the loop to kind of slow down the dynamics and get rid of some of the resonances. If you do that, you get a little bit better, right? But not great. But if you do something where instead you insert a lot more information, and what you do essentially is separate the problem into saying, first let me agree on where the center is, and then let's all move relative to the center. Let's come to a consensus about what we're doing, and then start to do it. Then you can implement that in this same sort of a framework and analyze it. You put in more feedback loops, it gets more complicated. But then what happens is pretty much exactly what you want. And the reason that happens is because now the information flow loop can go very fast, right? My motion is what's slow. And so what we recognized was that you just need to think about what's the information versus the dynamics that you're doing and sort of put those right. So if you're looking at performance, then you want to first share information, right? Understand what's going on and then do that motion. And so that helps decouple some of the unstable dynamics. And so we can analyze that in terms of these tools and say why it is that that works well. Okay, so...
But that last one is not really a control problem.
Not anymore, because you basically have decided where to go and then you go there. Sometimes you can do that, sometimes you can't, right? Depends. When the situation's changing quickly around you and you can't send information at incredibly high rates and other things, it gets back to the harder problem, right? Okay, so this idea of consensus then comes up in that context. It's a special case of all of this. There's been a lot of work over the last couple of decades on consensus. If you say in this context how to do consensus, we can talk about an asymptotic consensus problem. That is, can we prove asymptotic convergence to a single value? So for example, suppose that I want to solve the problem of figuring out the center of this formation. That's basically a consensus to the average position, right? We all know where our position is, and what we'd like to do is all agree on where the center of mass of the formation is, if you want. So one way to do that is to say, well, let's all essentially maintain our own local estimate, very much in the flavor of what you said, our local estimate of what we think the situation is, where we think the center is, and then we'll update our local information based on our neighbors. And so if you do that, essentially you set up exactly this type of a problem where you have an estimate of what the center of mass is. That estimate gets updated according to where you think the center of mass is and where your neighbor thinks the center of mass is. Everybody implements that same updated equation. It's a protocol, essentially a consensus protocol for how we agree. That basically gives you the Laplacian interconnecting these systems. Now in this situation, for this special case, there's a very easy picture, which is that these dynamics always live in the right-half plane, right, if it's a linear system. The eigenvalues of the Laplacian always live in the left-half plane. These systems will always be stable. So you'll never have this issue of having more complicated dynamics interacting with your information flow. You always get stability in this case. And so, in fact, that's the case. And you can show some things in terms of getting convergence and other things that have to do for directed graphs with having the graph be balanced, that is the same in degree for all of the nodes. So there's some details here. And people have extended this in a variety of ways. So Ali Jadbabai, for example, looked at what happened when you have switching, links are going in and out, right? You're doing, say, nearest neighbor rules, so your graph is not a fixed topology, but a changing topology based on nearest neighbors, and various other things. People have looked at the convergence properties. If you have small world networks, those give you faster convergence properties than other things. A variety of things. One of the things you can do is do distributed Kalman filtering, so in a kind of more deterministic sense, do some of the things that Hugh talked about, which is to say, I can have the thing I want to reach consensus on be the covariance matrix according of some sensor fusion problem. I can do, it's basically n squared consensus problems, right? And so you can implement that. So various people have done extensions of things in these ways. There are lots of things that are still open in information, problems. One of the ones that I like to think about is this one that I already mentioned, which is how does the graph topology affect the eigenvalues of L and how do we separate them? So I think this is an interesting problem. If you look at the characteristic polynomial for the Laplacian, it turns out that roughly, so those are the quotes, that the terms in it, so this should be an S minus 1 here, there's an S to the N term, then you get the sum of the weights of all of the individual edges. Then you get the sum of the weights over two cycles, the sum of the weights over three cycles, the sum of the weights over n cycles. So the coefficients are very much related to the topology. Right? Now the question is, can we tease out what the eigenvalues are, right, knowing that these coefficients are related to the topology? Haven't been able to do it yet. I've talked a couple of times about this problem at IPAM. Nobody's come back to me and said, here's how you solve it yet. I'm still hoping. Maybe one of these. Okay, so that's some of the work that we've done. There's also some robustness problems in this. You need to think about the fact that if one robot fails, you can get very bad results. And so the student Vijay Gupta and former postdoc Cedric Langberg thought a little bit about this. If I'm doing this average consensus problem, right, suppose I start out with a bunch of initial conditions and I'd like everybody to agree on what the average of those numbers is. Then we can do that, but suppose that node number 5 has a process failure, and so the process that's updating its average fails, and so it just keeps sending out the number 6. Right? So the average of these numbers is probably, let's say it's 3, and node number 5 just keeps sending out 6. What happens is the entire network converges to 6. Okay. Not good. Furthermore, it scales in a bad way. What you'd like is that if I have one node that's bad out of a billion, then I converge to an error that scales as 1 over a billion or 1 over a billion squared or something like that. Yeah, here you don't. Everybody converges to 6.
Right? So something particularly bad happen if you converge to 3 sixes?
Well, maybe. So there are fixes for that, but what you have to do is add more information flow, and you need redundant information flow in the right way, and so there's some very interesting questions about how you do that. You can look at different types of failures. One is that the node just stops communicating, so I don't send you anything. Another is that the node communicates, but essentially its internal processes stop, so it's communicating a fixed value. Another is that it basically sends you the wrong thing. It's running a different protocol because somebody forgot to update the version of it or something like that, and maybe it's even something that is trying to confuse the network. And what you'd like in this is you'd like that you have something where as the number of nodes goes up, the amount of error from any one of these failures goes down. And so Vijay and Cedric have looked at what can we say about different protocols that people have put out there and which ones are robust. I think there's some very interesting questions along these lines. Okay, I want to spend my last 3 minutes just talking about a seemingly unrelated problem maybe at first, but then I want to tell you it's related. And that's the following problem that we've looked at, which is urban driving. Right? So we're now participating in the 2007 urban challenge, which DARPA's running, and we've built this vehicle. This vehicle, you're looking at now an old version of it. Our vehicle currently has 9 cameras on it, 7 LADAR units, laser range finders, 4 GPS receivers, 2 inertial measurement units, tons of engine sensors and everything else. And we want it to do the simple task of driving around in the city and avoiding other cars and doing all the right things. And so in the previous urban challenge, or grand challenge, we had developed it for doing desert driving, so this is just a picture of it, taking all of that sensor data, fusing all of the sensor data from a number of different elements, and putting it together into some sort of a representation, a map which allows it to drive. Now this is a single agent, but in fact the way that we've implemented this system is a very distributed implementation, and so the same types of issues come up. And so the architecture that we've used for this is something that the controls community often gets called a network control architecture. And Kumar gave a talk at Caltech maybe about 2 years ago, something like that, and he used this picture that I thought was great, so I just started adopting it. Normally when we think about one of these systems, we think we have a system, this is the vehicle that we're trying to control, we have some sensing systems on it. Usually we think about having, say, a GPS receiver or something like that. We have some actuation, the brakes, the throttle, et cetera. And we take the sensed information, we construct some state estimate of where it is that we are based on the different sensors that we have. We take that state estimate, we use it for planning. We typically do online planning, so online receding horizon control, one of the things that we talk about. We take that trajectory now of where it is that I want to drive. We wrap a controller around it to actually keep me on that path with the uncertainties that come from steering and road and everything else. And this is sort of the standard controller. The problem is this isn't the problem for Alice. This is what we teach in classes, but it's not the problem we have for Alice, the vehicle that we drive in the Grand Challenge. Part of it is that we have mode and fault management. That is, we have to worry about somebody cuts in front of us or something else, and so you have to insert that in the loop. Another part of it, a little bit more relevant to what we're talking about here, is we have lots of sensing. 1 to 3 gigabits per second of raw sensor data. So you certainly aren't going to send the raw sensor data all real time to one computer to go figure out what to do. You probably aren't going to send some sort of description of, right, you know, sort of what the information of that is that takes more space than that, right? So you need to think about what are the representations, et cetera. So I think, for example, the types of things that you talked about, very, very relevant here. When you have lots of sensors, you tend to have a whole stack of state estimators as well, and these need to agree. So you have a consensus problem internal to your system, which is that we've had to distribute this. So we're currently running 10 processors on 6 different computers, so a couple of quad cores, that all have to agree on what it is that we're going to do if we're going to do this together. Right? So it's a distributed information representation. When you have lots of state estimates and other things, and when you're doing a mixed scale problem, for example, driving in urban environments, we have to worry about how do I get from here to Pasadena, but I also have to worry about when I'm driving down Westwood, which lane should I be in, but I also have to worry about where is that car and where am I, right? So different scales of problems. You tend to get lots of online estimators running. Again, these all have to go together. These are all distributed across a bunch of computers, so they need to agree on the time, right? So Kumar probably talked yesterday about time synchronization, I hope. That's really important in our system. We have an online model of what's going on as well. That online model tells us things like what's our current vehicle capability, what do we think other vehicles are going to do. And so all of this, right, is what's sitting inside our system. This is the low-level control for us. In addition to that, we have the higher-level things. What are our goals right now? Where should we be paying attention? What happens if something goes wrong? And what have we done before, and how do we do something about it? So this is the type of control system that we want to define. It is a very networked, very distributed system, lots of different information that has to flow around. Open problem, how much and what information should I send at what rates to get this to work as best as possible? And if you're interested in the types of things, the examples that Hugh showed or some of the things we've been doing on RoboCloud, then you also have the problem that there are multiple ones of these, which are also talking across. This is the problem that we're really trying to focus on and solve now, and trying to understand what's going on. You'll see whether we did it on the 3rd of November 2007, when the next DARPA Grand Challenge happens. Prizes are $2 million, $1 million, and $500,000, so the prize money's gone up since they put this chart together. Driving in urban environments, figuring out where other cars are, what to do about it, all of those good things. Okay, so I'll stop there. I'll kind of come back to the RoboFlag example. You know, we've been looking at these problems of distributed estimation, distributed control, cooperative control, all of these things, a number of different sub-problems. Broadly, I think that there's, and of course everybody in the room probably agree, there's lots of room for the integration of ideas from computer science, communications, information theory, networking, all of those things in these classes of problems. No single community kind of owns the whole problem, so how do we put these things together? And also something we haven't talked about, or I haven't talked about today, is the need for reasoning at higher levels of abstraction. So how do we represent, right, the types of things that are going on, say, in a traffic environment? So if you're driving today, when you drive home, think about, right, what would you tell a computer, right, about how to drive in this environment? Okay, I'll stop there.